All right, everybody. So back on the podcast, we have Alberto Nunez. How we doing, man?
Good, man. As well as we can be, man. We're pretty deep into this project, so
yeah.
You know, you get a little tampered with, but we're holding up, man.
For sure. Yeah. So congratulations on the recent contest, great placing, right? And now, so you've had one contest so far, and you're going to keep going to a few more contests while you're this lean.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a nice little way to open up the season. I totally, more than anything, it was supposed to be an assessment to see where I was given the stage that I'm at in regards to the contest prep. So wanted to analyze that, and there's no better way than, you know, being up there with, you know, some really good physiques, and it ended up working out my way. So like that was a bit of a surprise. A pleasant surprise for sure. Yeah, we have three more, and then we put it away for a while.
And why was it a surprise?
Usually, in order for me to be very as effective as I can be, I definitely have to be a few points leaner. So, you know, I
leaner than you were.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. So you've come in leaner then.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
For okay. Sure, for
sure. So I'm still in the process of doing that. Like I have until the end of the month, basically, to get it where I want it to be.
Okay.
And then kind of, pull a top gun and kind of steer this thing back up and get into maintenance mode for a few weeks so that, you know, your body can really finally like take its full form. So I'm still digging. I'm still digging. We're still on the way downwards.
Yeah. What was your, and so I think this is probably going to be a two main topic podcast. So I think I want to cover everything with your contest and whatnot. And then I did happen to see you guys had the almost like a response video on the genetics topic and the genetics video.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll definitely touch on that, which is always, sometimes I see these things totally coincidentally. Like I have a bad habit of when I wake up in the morning, I just immediately check my phone. And with YouTube, if you hover over a thumbnail, it will start playing the video and it will have the subtitles going. So I just happened to like, this is my gate, like just waking up days. And I happened to see the subtitles say Dave McConey something. And I was like, what is this? And then I watched the whole thing. So we'll definitely dive into all that as well.
Yeah. That phone habit, I'm trying to kill that too, man. It is,
it's
terrible. You know, I just read this book. Well, I read it a few months ago, like Detox, Dopamine Nation. And it's basically, I mean, everyone's like somewhat addicted to their phone. They just don't really, it is an adult pacifier, you know?
Yeah.
And when I actually, like, I have my rules, and I'm not the best at them yet, but I'm working on it. But when I listen to that and I do my job, it's just crazy how much more effective I am at everything else that I do.
You know? It's so tough, man. Even as, I mean, it's not just, you know, you think of people maybe who aren't productive, but plenty of productive people. I mean, everybody's on it. And I mean, I go to sleep and I don't want to put it down because there's always something else I could be doing. It's almost because I want to be productive. There's always more I could check. Definitely. And I mean, I've had rules for myself before where, okay, I can check it on the hour, you know, but I'll give myself 5 minutes on the hour or something. And then that's it. Or, I've even heard people, and I have this problem too now, where I will actually read fewer books because the dopamine hit of just sitting there and reading a book compared to the constant, you know, social media or whatever, there's just less of a stimulus, right? So you start to just think about other things. So it's definitely apparent.
I think at the end, like if we have some hard rules for ourselves, like we end up really controlling what we expose ourselves to, right? Mm-hmm. Which I think at the end everyone wins, because the content creators, like they have to, like it's like stuff that has to be worth, I don't know, whatever you allot for yourself, 30 minutes, mm-hmm. an hour. It's like, okay, it's got to be good. And that's how I do it. It's like the stuff that I allow myself to dive into, it's because it's really worth it, you know? Yeah. So it's like, for me, it's a few select podcasts, like some fitness, some not, and then just, hobbies within like the Reddit, like rabbit hole. But, mm-hmm. and when I do that, it's like, again, like I'm a producer, not a consumer, more so when it comes to this world.
Yeah.
even then, it's like what is it like the Biggie 10 crack commandments, like don't get high on your own supply. You got to be careful with that, man. Like it's hardwired to grab a hold of us, man.
Yeah. Well, now you and I are probably similar in that way, that I probably don't consume as much fitness content these days as people think. Like inherently it's a big part of our world, right? So we're going to, without even trying, come across a lot of stuff, but probably most of what I watch and read is just other things that interest me. Either like other sports, like I'm actually pretty into MMA, finance, things like that. So it's not just fitness 24/7, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You just have to stay on top of like what's going on in the industry. And, you know, I forget even myself that like, if there's something that's like making enough noise, like it's going to get to me, like, you know,
exactly.
You know, it's like, exactly. We'll tell you. So.
So what was the weight that you just competed at? And I know previously you were down into the 150s. What was the weight here?
So I'm using this app called the Happy Scale, which I think is, it's a sensational app because, you know, we all kind of get into, you know, chasing the highlights and the lowlights when it comes to our weigh-ins. So it does a good job with the running average and kind of just really letting you see like what the trend is actually doing. So I think my running average going into that show was like high 163s.
Oh, okay.
And I think I've yet to see a weigh in under 160. And previous to you, like in order to have, like, yes, like striated glutes, I needed to see a weigh in under 160. So, you know, that's like, to me, that's really good progress at this point.
Because I remember the last time we spoke, you said you'd love to not have to go below 160. But admittedly, you also haven't gotten as lean now as you previously have. So do you have a sense of what you have to get to at least tie as lean?
Yeah, I'll probably have to see weigh-ins under 160 for sure.
Okay.
But my average weight won't be under 160. Like I know that for a fact, but I fluctuate quite a bit. Like I have 3 consecutive refeeds coming up. That's how I cycle my week.
Okay.
And they'll push me up over 166. Yeah. So there's a lot of noise going on in that sense. But I can definitely say I've probably added maybe a pound of muscle since like my last, which there's some small print to get into there, but which I think is pretty significant.
How long ago did you compete?
So it was 2017, but I'll tell you what, like the majority of this progress is probably within the last year.
Mm.
I think lockdown really helped take away some things where, okay, now you got them taken away from you. You appreciate them a little bit more and it really lit the fire. So yeah, having training taken away for about 4 months, you know, like
did you do stuff at home or were you just like, look, it's not worth it?
I did, but the frequency started to get to the point where it was like 3 days a week, 3 days, 3 training days, like every 8-9 days. And it was an abusive relationship, man, because I remember I'm like, you're so not having fun with this. Like you hate this, but like you keep coming back to this, you know, like abusive as form of training where it's like I had a 40 pound kettlebell. But abusive relationship is probably how I would describe it. Like, you know, it's like if you're talking to your friends, they're like, just let her go, man, just let her go. You know, but no, I kept showing up at least three days a week almost, and then I held off a little bit longer. We had it pretty easy here in regards to lockdown, like it wasn't like some other states, but somewhere in the middle. But I felt guilty going back to training and then trying to motivate some of my athletes like, hey, you can do this. So I probably, I cracked a month into that. I'm like, all right, let me get my, they let us have 3 trainings at like hours a week at the facility that I was a member of. And
oh, really?
Yeah. You have to go by appointment. That's how that was.
Okay.
And I'll tell you what my days were like, it was like, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday. Like that's what I had. And those were like the 3 most awesome hours of my week.
Yeah, so sure.
Get back in there, I was like, oh, geez, it's like, I fell in love with training again, which I think is highly important, especially when you've been doing this like for a while. Like, I think you almost have to have, you know, people talk about the dreamer bulk, but you almost have to have that dreamer mentality, like where it's like being highly optimistic about what you're doing and what it's going to result in is going to make it more likely that you get the best possible outcome. And that's definitely something I did on the other side of that.
Yeah. So I have two, one's a diet and one's a training related question. So one with the diet, you said that you have three refeeds coming up, but three consecutive is in like 3 days in a row you'll be refeeding.
Yeah.
Is that how you've been structuring it throughout the prep, or what goes into that for you?
So my last prep had similar trend as well. And this is something I'd been doing with my athletes since like 2015. And I mean, I saw great success with them. So I remember 2017, I'm like, here's my chance to like finally try it on myself. And it was, for me, it's been amazing. Like the frequency is going to kind of sort of depend on the person. But for me, 2 days, I start with 2 days a week consecutive. And then now I'm up to three consecutive, just because I don't want to expose myself to the elements nearly as much at this stage.
Okay.
And the numbers, honestly, they are, I'd say probably on, they're more likely to be a small surplus than probably just a very tiny deficit. But
and what are the numbers?
I just go by calories and I kind of ballpark the calories. The calories are somewhere in the, this whole prep has been ballparked.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think somewhere around 3,500 calories right now.
Okay.
On the high days. And right. Low days are roughly about 1,000 calories less.
Wow. And that, so 4 days a week or at times 5 days a week was 1,000 calories less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Four low days, three high days. Yeah.
And you don't do a ton of cardio, right?
I want to do more, but that's going to have to wait till the off season just because, hey, you know, like I turned 40 early next year. So it's like, I better start thinking about cardiovascular health a little bit more. So I got a Peloton and I'm like, all right.
Okay.
I can't use it just yet because if there's one thing that taps me out, like the diet itself, I think part of it is physiological. Part of it is just experience. Like it doesn't tap me out too much.
Okay.
Cardio, the days that I do cardio, I feel, whoa, like just, it's so just steamrolled. So I want to get better at that.
So it's mainly a health thing for you?
Mostly a health thing. Yeah, like trying to stop myself from adding a long, slow 60-minute session just because, you know, like for cardiovascular fitness, it's like that is your base. You know, it's like you need to have long and slow sessions.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to resist that, but I can see myself definitely doing more cardio like in the off season just to stay in better health because – yeah, cardiovascular health, like when I was younger, just kind of happened. Like I could spontaneously go run you a 6-7 minute mile, but like I know that's not the fact any longer. So it's like, okay, that's probably a symptom of like where things are generally heading. So you better stay on top of that.
Yeah, cardio, it's mostly a hate relationship for me with cardio. But ever since I was young, you guys talked about how for some people things just feel differently, and we'll definitely dive into that as well. But and you know, like this cardio just feels different for certain people. And to me, I mean, I've gone through absolutely brutal, like I'm going to vomit or have vomited leg workouts, and I would still rather do that than a long cardio session. And I last year trained for a mile time just because I didn't have a reference of anything. So a mile time, people know their mile times from high school and whatnot. And I was always a slow kid. Like I literally never ran more than a 7 minute mile. So I figured, okay, if I did that at 140 pounds, then my goal was to do a 6 minute mile at the time, 30 years old and 185. And so I did it, and it took training, but it wasn't, you know, I was only running once or twice a week, but that was so miserable to me to do that, just to hit a 6 minute mile that obviously, you know, high school kids do without thinking about it all the time. Right. So it's just interesting. It was just such a different, or like you said, like you hate that kettlebell training, like physical activity can be so much more or less enjoyable depending on one's preferences.
Yeah, that is that. That's so. Yeah, no, same thing with the cardio. I'm similar to you, where I don't necessarily like it, but it's a like a W to start the day. Yeah, you know? I put in the category of like not picking up my phone is the first thing I do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like okay, you're building momentum. This is going to be a good one. So it has been that sort of anchor, but it's not a lot of cardio right now. It's 3 sessions. At 30 minutes.
Yeah.
It was
people love the Peloton. So man, they're so expensive. But everybody I know who has one loves it. So
I don't like the classes. I think a lot of, I don't want someone, you know, giving me motivational, like,
yeah,
you know,
right.
I don't think it's like quiet, you know, I do the scenic routes and, there's like rankings. So mm-hmm. like that speaks to me.
For sure. You know,
course,
yeah,
and definitely. It's break into like the top like 5th percentile now, you know.
Oh, nice. Is there still a so even if you're not doing the classes, I know that it's like an expensive, I think they're still like $2,000 or whatever they are, but then there's the monthly fee. Okay, yeah. So even if you're not doing classes, that's what kills me. I hate that. Well,
my girlfriend likes the classes, so it has to be part of the deal. I can't, I think I've taken them like 4 times. I'm like,
yeah. So, okay. So you've got 3 more contests, and is it just, okay, we're just going to keep getting leaner, and how spaced apart are they? I mean, obviously it's going to be hard for most people to stay so lean.
I'd say, so it's the first one was September 24th. I have one, coming up October 29th. And then I have, one November 12th and November 19th.
Okay.
But I probably won't be in like my top shape until the end of October anyways.
Yeah. So
it's really going to be maybe 3 or 4 weeks of like, okay, I'm like absurdly lean.
Yeah.
So it's not too bad. It's not too terrible. I think what ends up happening is you learn to brace yourself for the hits because you know what's kind of like coming around every corner. So mm-hmm. it's not like the first time. Like the first time you get lean, like you're like, yeah, I'm getting lean, I'm gonna get shredded, and then you find out like what that world's like, and you're not ready for that no matter what you hear. But now it's okay. I've kind of you brace for it, and then honestly, sometimes what you're bracing for seems to like not come around. So it gets easier with every time you put it out there.
Yeah. Do you find do you take on fewer clients during a contest prep or things like that?
No. I'd say probably the biggest impact it has on my life, and there's a lot of things when it comes to this that I do enjoy is that there's just less randomness.
Mm.
You know? So there's less spontaneous things pop up. Like everything just needs to be a little bit more scheduled. So I'd say if anything, when it comes to work, that kind of stays relatively the same.
Okay. I'm just thinking like if you're so drained, you know, it'd be hard, especially if somebody has a physical job, you know, if you're a physical therapist or anything, you're like moving around all day, you know, if you get to the point where just moving is draining, you know, it's probably pretty hard. Or if somebody's obviously, you know, construction or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, I can't speak on that too much because I do sit at home, but, like I don't notice that I lose any sort of like sprintiness. I'd say if anything, like I'm a little bit more zippy because I'm lighter, you know?
Yeah.
But honestly, I think that's just a unique thing. I think that's not everybody. Still, I'd say it just gets easier over time, and it definitely gets easier over time, regardless of you know, the person's like how they naturally tick from a physiological standpoint. Like my first time was a wreck.
Yeah.
Compared to this. Yeah.
So what was it in the last, you said you feel like this potentially pound of muscle or that you put on is from the last year. Is that, I know you were working with Cassim Hansen. There's some other things you were doing. What do you feel like was a big driver of that?
Yeah. Well, I'd say for sure, like the motivation, like to like, okay, I got my training taken away. Okay, now you have it back. So I appreciated the fact that I was able to perform a leg curl.
Mm-hmm.
It involved bands in like a door.
Right.
So that was nice. And then Kaz has definitely helped me out in regards to, I think first and foremost, like the ergonomic standpoint of movements, you know, because over the course of your career, it's like you take, it's thousands and thousands of reps, you know? So it's like, okay, maybe you should be smart when it comes to what is the way that's going to let this joint have the most reps in there. So I definitely feel that that's been huge. Like this is the least, I always thought there was a certain level of just background pain you have to live in as a athlete, but that's definitely like downgraded quite a bit. So I think it's probably even stretched out my career some. And then, yeah, just his perspectives on many, on the approaches to exercise selection, and it's reduced my output to the point where I used to classify myself as a kind of higher volume sort of guy. And now like I'm probably like an 8 set across every body part sort of guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, and I think that's just a general trend for most people. It's like, you know, like you see these kids with like fresh joints and, you know, all the hopes in the world. And it's like, yeah, but you're sweeping all over the place, kid, you know? And then you see a guy like Jeff Alberts, and I can kind of relate to that a little bit more now where it's like, okay, but every rep, like they're all the same, you know? Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm able to do a lot more with less because of, yes, the exercise selection. I think part of it's just maturity, like we're here talking about like phones and attention spans. Like we've all had those study sessions like where it's like, okay, I'm study for 10 hours, but how much of that were you actually studying?
Sure.
Right. And as you develop and you get older, it's like you use your time slots because you don't have as much time, like much more efficiently. So I think just being able to zone in as an athlete, just a skill that you pick up as time goes on.
Well, unfortunately, Alberto, I can't take what you're saying at face value because this does not comport with the literature that tells me that we have to do higher volumes over time and higher is always better. So.
Yeah. No. And I think there's just a lot of things that you can't capture. Like, yeah, as an athlete matures, you know, like better exercise selection, like give me 4 sets on a good leg press, or a good hack squat. And I think it does a lot more for my quads than say a back squat would. And I'm not a terrible back squatter, you know?
Right.
So, you know, there's things like that. And then you just get stronger. Like, so it's like, oh, man, I used to have a friend, Dominic, he's still my friend, Dominic DiAgostino. Oh my God. His logs back in the day, this dude was insanely strong. Like I've seen him pull, I think
he's an animal, man. Yeah.
660. He hadn't eaten for a week.
Yeah. I was going to say, I've seen him do some of these fasting things. It's crazy.
But I remember his logs on bodybuilding.com like 20 years ago almost. And like he would get up to the 170 pound dumbbells on the incline. And but you see all his warm up sets and you're like, man, just to warm up to your working weight.
Right.
That's a lot of like you're passing all these previous points of homeostasis along the way. So he would get to like 2 working sets, but you could even if you were a young kid who was a volume junkie at the time, who's like solution to everything was like just do more just in case. You see that and you're like, wow, I can see why he only does 2 sets for like the clavicular region of his pecs, because those are 150 pound dumbbells and then a set of 170. I can see how that's plenty.
That's a thing, man, with free weights. So yesterday, like I you know Aaron Straker? Aaron Straker, he is with Brian Borstein on Eat, Train, Prosper.
I listen to their podcast all the time because they're kind of like my age.
Aaron, yeah, I was surprised he's like 35. I was like, damn, man, he looked great for 35. I mean, not that 35 is old, but I'm just saying he looks young. And so we got to work out together last weekend, which was a blast. And I was telling him, you know, I can't really train my I'm taking like 2 weeks off from chest because I just got a little like nick in it. And so just yesterday I was looking at my time and to finish my workout, same number of exercises, same number of sets, more or less, but I wasn't doing barbell bench press. I was just doing a machine. And there was the workout was 10 minutes shorter because you're just not, and same thing with like a squat versus even like a hack squat. For some of these free weight movements, the warm up takes so long to get to the appropriate weight. You know, you're adding a quarter, you're adding 10, whatever. So I just from an efficiency standpoint, and as you get stronger, I see like a lot of these guys do switch to more like hammer strength machines and just machines in general. I think part of it's an injury risk thing, but part of it is just efficiency.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's just so many muscle groups that go into, and so many other things that go into like a crispy back squat day,
mm-hmm.
that sometimes, you know, it's going to take you 30 minutes to get to your working weight. And sometimes it's like, oh, okay, I'm the lower end, but with it's so much more consistent with a machine. And I think sometimes we forget that, you know, we're humans at the end. So when you have one of those days where it's like, okay, it's going to be 30 minutes to get to my warm-up weight, like that definitely impacts things. It might probably impacts the way you perceive the fatigue that comes along with it as well. So, machines, like the only thing I do that's like free weight is going to be...
You do like dumbbell bench, right? Do you still do dumbbell
bench? Yeah. And else, and that's it.
Yeah. And the consistency, I because I don't do them as much anymore, I don't really notice it. But when I was doing a lot of bench or squatting and deadlifting, something would happen. I don't know exactly how to explain it neurologically, but I would hit a PR somewhere between a 1 to 5 rep PR. And literally the next session, I would be so much weaker. And this would consistently happen. I mean, I would get up there and then I'd be weaker. And I can remember a number of squat workouts where it would be a barbell squat and then it was Smith squat and then, you know, whatever accessories. And numerous times I'd go in and I might have a really bad barbell back squat. And then my Smith squat was so consistent. You know, it would be whatever weights I was using, even if I was way weaker on barbell. So something neurologically was happening there that I don't know, was a stabilization thing, but I'd be much weaker and Smith would be consistent week to week to week. I don't know if you've ever had anything like that.
Yeah. There's with free weights, especially the lower body stuff, like it's almost like improvising to some extent is a skill which requires it shifting from one muscle group to another. You know, like maybe today your deadlift might be more adductor dominant or something like that, just because it's like what can contribute the most based off like readiness. So, I mean, there's just so many glitchy things going on.
Mm-hmm.
With those. And even with like my high level powerlifters, like you see it, and with those guys, it's crazy because I gave this as an example a while back. I'm sorry if I said this before here because I put it out there a lot. And this was 2019 USAPO Nationals. This was the juniors 83 kilo class, right? Out of those 24 or 25 junior lifters that were there, I think 21 or 22 squatted 500 pounds. So this is a very talented pool. Like, you know, there's some of the mm-hmm. best squatters in the world for that weight class, for that age group. And I can tell you that the majority of them, when it comes to hypertrophy work, they go hop on the machine. And these are very, yeah. So they're very like, that's, I can go over a few things that I think have changed powerlifting over the last few years. Like people always talk about like with the record books ain't changing. It's like, actually they kind of are. And there's a number of different reasons for that. But yeah, like they know that they have these limitations when it comes to what they can get out of a squat, when it comes to like specifically targeting muscle growth, that's going to make the engine bigger so they can squat bigger weights. So they do their sport specific work on the barbell. But then when it's time to get jacked, it's like they hop over into machines because, hey, they're very skilled, but still for them, their torso is still going to be the limiting factor. It's like the same reason we use wraps when we're like lifting, you know, because you don't want these to be the limiting factor. So, and plus, I mean, they're probably squatting like 3 times a week. So it's like, why add to that fatigue?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Right. Just real quick, because we did mention your dumbbell bench. I wanted to ask you this and I just always forget. If I look at your form videos, it seems like when I do a dumbbell bench, my range of motion is significantly greater than my barbell bench because I can obviously bring it down to the sides. And it seems like you have almost like almost where your arm or your hands, are not as low as even a barbell would hit. And I'm just wondering if there's an intentional limitation with your range of motion or just obviously you're doing it for a reason.
I think a lot of it, kind of comes down to the length of my forearm and my humerus to some extent, right?
So it's just kind of what feels natural to you?
Yeah. I think the insertion point of my pec is definitely just a smidge below the origin. I think like pretty quickly, like I run out of like pec range of motion when I come down, but then also I have stubby arms. So
you just start to feel like more in your shoulder, like the range of motion kind of going off there.
Yeah. Basically. It's always kind of been that way. I should bench more, to be honest, based off that, just because my limb proportions. But yeah, I thought you were going to mention the fact that I'm a little bit more tucked in and you know, the head.
Definitely more tucked in, yeah, which I think probably doesn't stand out to me because I also am more tucked in. I guess it's just from an injury standpoint. I used to be, and I'm stronger if I go super wide, I think because it's such a stretch that I almost bounce out of the hole more easily. So like my best dumbbell, I was pretty good on incline dumbbell at 100 for 17 or 18, and it was full range of motion, but like I said, definitely off to the side, and like I almost would get a lot of that stretch reflex out of it. And now doing things paused and full range of motion, I look back to some of the weights I would do, and it's funny because I'm not any smaller than then, and it's definitely not me trying to say, oh, it's not just strength versus size. It's just that you get used to what you do, right? And when you stop doing these stretch reflex, you know, quick movements, you just can't do them anymore. And if I were to try that now, I don't know, I'd maybe get half the reps with the same weight. I mean, it's a big difference.
It is. No, same thing. I don't know what structures I was like are kind of collapsing together, but there was definitely something that probably wasn't even the tissues I'm trying to like get after. I'd rather not mess with that now.
Yeah.
And it's like, how can I get the most out of the least amount of weight is probably the game I play while still trying to be as progressive as possible.
Yeah. Have you torn anything before? Torn any muscles?
Let's see. I'm sure. Oh yeah. Yeah. So, I tore my soleus, on a leg press, which is so weird on leg press. I think it was just a bad model leg press. One of those machines that it just doesn't fit you and your body's trying to tell you, I don't like this, bro. And I didn't listen. So, leg press too. So I wasn't even getting a whole lot of like,
it was a what leg press?
More, I was doing it in a more hip dominant stance. So I typically do it like
feet
higher.
Yeah. Yeah.
It went and I remember rolling up my pants and I'm like, please, like as long as the Achilles is there, I'm okay with this.
How did it heal? It long-term was fine.
I think it was just a very, cause I finished the rep. I think that helped. So, you know, it's always a disaster when you don't make it to that point. And it was like one day of walking with a limp. And then the second day I could walk pretty much normal.
So you didn't need surgery or anything.
No, I think it was just the last level strain, basically.
Okay. Because Jeff Alberts also, he tore his gastro.
Yeah. His soleus. He did not finish that rep.
Okay. Yeah. And wow. So you guys are probably the only two I've seen with cat tears. Cause I wonder about that too. I'm like, man, I don't have a lot of room to make my cats even worse. So if they tear, I'm stuck.
If you're like Jeff, he got a nice little like divot in there now, so it looks kind of freaky.
Oh, really? Okay. But yeah, the difference between powerlifters and bodybuilders in that regard, you know, it's just, that's one of the things, like not that I'm old, but honestly, even just being older than 30 now, it's just something I think about more, where I'm like, oh, do I want to do a one rep max pull up or bench or anything at this point? Because it's just, as we talked about before, if I tear something, it's also horrible for my career too, so that it's like doubly bad. But it just doesn't seem as worth it to me anymore.
No, I if it wasn't for lockdown, I think I would have ended this offseason with like a 550 squat.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What did you get to? I know you beat 500.
I think I did a set of two with 515 at some point, but
wow, nice.
Barely squatting. I was squatting like three times a week. Like that was my frequency.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's just because that's as much it was a get real moment with you, because so much of like getting strong is like hitting the books when you're studying. It's like you have to be there and present in every rep, like you have to take notes on. And for me, I just realized that even when I was doing higher frequency squatting, it was like I was just getting through the sessions as opposed to like really paying attention to what was going on. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just did three sets a week, and I'm like, ooh, I think we've grown
three
up.
Three sets or three sessions per week?
Three sets a week. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So okay.
Yeah, it was one single at like a 7-8 RPE, and then I would do two back offsets off that. So it was very strength specific.
Wow.
And I know if I had I added a second session, it would have guaranteed me, but I wanted to wait and milk that just a little bit longer. So I toy around with the, like, let me see if I can squat 600, like it's off season. But then like, I think about the process and the bad days and the time it's going to take, not time in regards, like, I think it'd probably take me a little over a year, but more so the time investment when you're in the gym, and it's like, no, thank you.
Yeah, that, but yeah, then, and definitely, like you said, the, I don't know, maybe I'm overly cautious about it. I guess I don't see too many people get injured, like acute injuries from the heavy squatting. Like certainly benching, obviously tons of pec tears. I see overuse injuries when it comes to squatting.
Yeah.
Deadlifting, yeah, like bicep tears, things like that. I actually feel a lot of strain on my pec when I do deadlifting, I've heard other people comment on, but it's pretty rare. But I think it's just I would do sumo, and the way it would pull my arm in, I would feel very, very intense stress on my chest. And there's been a couple of times where I was like, if I do one more rep, this absolutely feels like it's going to tear, like to that level.
Yeah. When I start off my deadlifting, like it's my elbows and my pecs that I have to kind of slowly grow into. So yeah, like it's fun, but honestly, I look at my milestone lifts like from this point onwards, and I'm like, I'm pretty okay with those. And
yeah, yeah.
They're going to be nothing special when it comes to like the strong people I know. So I just
that's a big thing too, man. You look at that and you see, you know, like a lot of people kind of talk crap on Lane for like he keeps getting injured, whatever. But it's like, yeah, but I'm not saying it is worth it, but you can make an argument that it's worth it when you could potentially be a world record holder. Like I could see that. But man, like if you're not to hate on anybody's individual journey, but I do think you have to step back and consider if you're going to do all this for a 60th percentile squat, is it worth making that your whole life or injuries? And, you know, at some point, maybe then it's not worth it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that is a variable to take into consideration. It's like, you know, what does this, where does this stand, you know, compared to like my peers, right? Like as much as like this should be internal, like, you know, like sometimes
we're human,
we're good at, like, it's like maybe better focusing on those. So, and for me, like it's definitely, it's not my gift at this point.
Mm-hmm. So just wrapping up the training aspect. So, because I think a lot of people are always very curious in terms of how can we progress after a very long time. And obviously we don't have a DEXA from, I mean, you have done a DEXA, but, and actually it'd be very interesting maybe to get another DEXA since you are somebody that has a legitimate one. But to say maybe there was a pound of muscle. So really it sounded like the main thing was, as ethereal as this might sound, like intent and focus, right? I mean, you didn't mention like that I incorporated this exercise and it was a huge thing. It was a lot of just focus on it.
Yeah, just a more positive, less defensive attitude when it came to my lifting. You know, it's like, all right, you know, like you kind of have to purposely put yourself in the state of mind of that, you know, 19-year-old who was like, hey, I'm going to be 240 pounds on stage someday. You know, some people might need drugs, but I don't need drugs. It's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, that's not how it works. But at least when you go into your sessions, like it's like I'm going to maximize like what's going on today. That's been a huge help, as well as, okay, what makes the most sense from an orthopedic standpoint, like what you know, what's going to make me less likely to get injured, because that is most people's bottleneck, like over the course of a career anyways. So taking that into consideration, like I think honestly probably started with the squat, whereas it's like, okay, I legit had 12 reps every week to get better at the squat. And I did the most I could with that. And the same thing with my training. I think for a lot of folks, it's like, hey, like Like, let's have an inventory check when it comes to like exercise selection, when it comes to how you execute your movements, you know, things like that. Like I'm still working on it. Like I'm battling my pendulum squat right now. And sometimes in order to get to a certain sequence, like, you know, a 3x5 that I'm currently doing, like I'll catch myself like on set 2 and 3. I'm like, oh, that was cheap, bro. That was cheap because you just want to meet the sequence. Mm-hmm. You know, so like legit, how can I get the most out of every single rep sort of deal? So
Yeah.
So I'm much more efficient. It's hard to convince someone in their early 20s to like do this because everything is so fresh. You can handle so much.
Right.
You know, because you haven't beaten up that system nearly as much. But, you know, someone who does that, it's like, you know, like with pitchers, like they count their pitch counts like going through high school. Like, mm-hmm. you know, there's record books of how much you've put through that shoulder.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't think about as much. With bodybuilding. So yeah. So that's been the majority of what's changed things is just being more optimistic about what I can do for sure. Like almost placeboing myself like on purpose. And then getting better at the focus bit. And then also just being a little bit more just selective with like what tools I use.
Yeah. So that's actually a perfect transition to get into that, the video you guys recorded, because so basically for people who don't know, we can link that below. I had my, I think pretty comprehensive video on genetics, maybe a month ago now. And then I sent it to you and obviously I referenced the 3DMJ guys quite a bit. And you guys put out I wouldn't call it a response video necessarily, but you talked about it and put out a video on genetics just recently. And in that, I say it's a good transition because you talked about how, in a way, you almost have to be a dreamer and you do kind of placebo yourself. And that's something that I have had mixed thoughts on over the years, because part of me is I do openly say I think a lot of bodybuilders are kind of delusional in certain ways. But I also wouldn't want to take that from somebody because, one, you don't know if they're wrong necessarily. And two, in a way, it's almost like... You know, it's like, would you rather be, and I'm not saying this of bodybuilders, but just as a general life thing. If somebody said, well, you could be dumb and really happy or smart and miserable. It's like, man, I'd probably rather be dumb and really happy. And it's oh. So, you know, and if you could almost have this delusion, but it makes you excited to do this thing all the time, maybe that's better.
Man, I have a few friends that they legit will sit there and laugh at the most like slapstick type of like beat, and I'm like, man, I wish I could be you sometimes. I love these guys. So they, you know, they have their own perks and their own talents, but that's the one thing I'm like me picking a movie, it's like I have to, like, I overanalyze like what I'm going to spend these 90 minutes on, like,
yeah, sure.
But yeah, you know, I think there's, because I get where you're coming from too with the, it's like, hey, this is about as good as you're going to get at this. Go do other things with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like,
so, potentially. Yeah.
Or like, it's like, don't be afraid of doing other things.
Yeah.
You know, like that sort of deal. And I guess to me, like when it comes to bodybuilding, like I've working on one thing that I'm really trying to master makes me understand the world at large, like so much better. Like there's just lessons that I'm always pulling from bodybuilding that I'm like, this is you when it comes to this other thing in your life, like same errors, like this mm-hmm. is what you're, this is how you interact with your environment. So, you know, there's a lot of that I get from the bodybuilding. And, you know, the one thing is for sure is that there's only so many things you can do to make yourself better. It's like, hey, get your sleep, you know, get your food in, you know, train, which I do think is you progress. If anything, your volume is going up, but at the same time it's going down. Like I can argue that right now on a per muscle group basis, I'm doing more volume than ever, but that's just because the exercises are better fits. I'm much more focused. You know, all these things that you really can't necessarily even like measure, mm-hmm. but like back then, like I go back like 15 years and I have videos of myself lifting 15 years ago. It's like, yeah, you're doing a lot of the sets, bro, but like they're all over the place. You know, like you're not hitting as many bullseyes every training session. So the amount of time that you spend on this, like I think in the off season, I'll probably have to go down to 4 days a week simply because the amount of good work I'm doing is just going to require that. So it opens up your time, you know, because you know exactly at a certain point, you should know like what gets the needle moving. And this is one thing Kaz has said, and I'm like, oh, this hits bodybuilding. Like more people need to hear this. Bodybuilding is a sport of over recovery.
Okay.
Because everyone wants to do something proactive, and it's like, well, yeah, you can, but a lot of that stuff is going to be outside the gym. It's like managing your stress. It's like getting your sleep and, you know, the food, like, you know, that sort of deal. And if I do that, I still have a lot of time to do the other things I want to do. And the best part is that since I'm trying to master this and I've gotten pretty far in this, like it just changes my perspective when it comes to any other side hobby that I take up, where it's like I'm, you know, like we all get those noobs in regards to like trainees, and it's like this is what I think you should be, but you're over here and distracted. I put myself in that position, and I'm like, okay, I'm a noob entering this world. Like, what should I be focusing on? Like, how should I, you know, tackle the situation that's in front of me? So I think it's more important to me than ever, the bodybuilding, but in regards to like the time I spent on it, it's like actually kind of condensed, and all the things that maybe do leak out and impact other parts of my life, like they're net positives, like the stress management, sleep. I don't think if I didn't train, like I would be that focused on those things as much as I am now if it wasn't for bodybuilding.
Yeah, for sure. A couple points on that. I mean, one, definitely it seems like the most productive people on average are also doing a lot of other things like working out and whatnot. A lot of times I find people, obviously there's excuses there, but I make a ton of analogies. I always think about things like that. And half of my analogies are to fitness stuff, you know, and it's just very relatable. And to be clear, I'm not saying, you know, you just at the start of the conversation there said that you were like, well, you know, if you've hit this kind of peak, just do something else. Just to clarify, I think that's a viable option for people to do. I'm not saying that's what anybody should do, especially I've said this to Steve Hall too. Like you, Steve Hall, this is your life and you're at a peak level of it among most people. So I would not say that you guys should, you know, go do something else. I mean, you're at, you know, if you think about the top of your hierarchy, essentially, right? I mean, not that you're the best bodybuilder, but among a lot of people, you're top. And to leave and do, you know, whatever, jiu-jitsu, well, now you're starting at the bottom. Maybe you do that as a side hobby or something. But I think it's great to be able to have a couple areas of your life where you can really refine and become expert in. You know, you don't want to be just kind of mediocre at everything. I kind of keep that as my hobbies. This is why some people say, oh, you should try this or that. It's like, look, I think out a lot of things. And to me, if I'm going to spend a lot of time doing something, I want to make sure that it's something, one, I want to be dedicated to, but two, that I'm going to be doing for a long time. And the other stuff can stay as a hobby. But I think it's cool to have a few things you're kind of a master at.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I know a lot of young bodybuilders who are still trying to climb up. And I consider anyone who's a body recomp enthusiast, you're a bodybuilder, you know, at the end. Like bodybuilders are very possessive about that. Mm-hmm. Like, going on stage, it's like, that's bullshit, bro. Like that's not, no. A quick point. And I came to this realization that, yeah, bodybuilding is the most popular sport in the world when you think about it.
If you think like gym goer and things like that, like
everyone wants to do something with their, like, that's what bodybuilding is. It's like, I want to change my body composition.
Right.
So that's all it is. And yeah, we all have slightly different preferences, but we also have like different classes and, you know.
But I think that also is what makes it hard for people. You know, people, there's the classic quote, comparison is the thief of joy, right? And we should have gratitude for things. But at the end of the day, I think that's what makes it harder in a sense, because like, let's say you play tennis, even if you aren't necessarily built for tennis, just by virtue of the fact that most people don't play tennis, you could become better than 99% of the population pretty easily. Again, not among tennis players, but of everybody. That's number one. Number two, people don't see your skill in most sports. They're not walking around seeing, oh, wow, I can tell he's a really good whatever player. With bodybuilding or fitness, everybody is looking at everybody all the time, right? It affects your day-to-day life. It affects how people interact with you. And so there's this huge pool. So I agree. It's the most popular sport, you know, however you want to call it.
And as much as, you know, we try to tell each other we shouldn't do this, like, we judge people based off appearances, you know, like, if an attractive man or woman asked me for directions, like, I probably don't realize this, but I'm gonna tell them a little bit differently compared to, you know, if Quasimodo came over and
right.
So, like, there's that backbone already, and it's something we should be aware of, but it's fundamentally never going to change because it's like hardwired into our, like,
exactly
biology. So yeah, now you make a sport out of this, and geez, like, that can make you less happy in a way if you're not careful, even though you're better off than you would have been, right? Because, like, I mean, think about it. Speaking of genetics, like, there's a baby born today who's, like, got millions of dollars in the bank account already.
Right.
Right. So that doesn't mean that, hey, you shouldn't make, like, good fiscal decisions for yourself, like, when it comes to your life. Like,
right.
We all can progress.
Yeah, I have a video coming out. I just saw it's a topic. I don't, you know, I stay mostly within fitness, but I will talk about other things related to it. And, you know, in my practice, I'll do veneers, I can do Botox and fillers and things like that if people want it. And, so I have a video coming out on that and kind of, I guess, attractiveness standards and whatnot. But I always think it's interesting when people say, well, these things don't matter or you shouldn't care. And it's like, look, man, if that's how you want to live your life, that's fine. But in the real world, we absolutely judge based on how people look. I don't even just mean attractiveness in terms of facial attractiveness. I mean, how you dress, right? How kempt you are, things like that. It's a huge difference, right? And I just think it's, again, if you want to put on this face that it doesn't matter, that's fine. But in the real world, it does matter.
Yeah. Like, we should all, like, maybe just be aware of that. But no, if I go out, like, dress nice, like, it's just so different, like, the sort of customer service I get versus mm-hmm. like hair all down and
all right,
it's very different. I go from this guy to, like, sir, you
know? yeah right. So one thing I was going to mention, and we kind of talked about this before with the running, is you said one of the genetic components is how difficult some of these things feel for somebody. And I think that's a less talked about, but really important topic. And even Nick talked about a little bit on, he talked about some people are just inherently more motivated, or really the term would be a conscientiousness, right? And that is absolutely influenced genetically. I think about this sometimes with my patients, where there is one woman I worked on and she did not want any lidocaine. So, like, no numbing at all. And she's like, oh, well, I have a really high pain tolerance. And the reality is, some people do having a high pain tolerance would be, okay, this person feels this as a 7 out of 10 pain, and this person feels that as a 7 out of 10 pain, but it doesn't bother them as much. That is very different than the other hugely variable thing of, you just actually don't feel the pain. And like, when I worked on this woman, I was like, if you felt what some patients felt, there's no way you could do what I'm doing to you without lidocaine. You just couldn't. Right. And so pain is hugely variable. But I think how difficult just getting yourself to go to do physical activity is hugely variable. Or in your case with dieting, you know, how hard is it? Of course, it's hard for you to get contest lean, but you said yourself, it probably isn't as hard as somebody who maybe has a natural set point of 20%+ body fat.
As much as people wanted to give me credit for, like, damn, you go there, like, there is... I'm like, for example, my body temp never changes. Like, I'm never cold when I'm prepping.
You know, really?
Like, I stay a little furnace the whole way.
Wow.
Like, libido for the most part stays on point. Like, I think at worst it resembles, like, when you have, I don't know, like, enough things going on in a week where it's like you just don't have the time to. Mm. But but that's all, like, intact.
Wow.
Right. So it's like hunger. Also, same thing. It's like, I'm not a hungry person. Like, someone has to tell me when I'm prepping that, hey, bro, you're kind of slowing down. Like, go get something to eat, more so than, like, my stomach. So
wow.
Like, all these things. And, like, prior to this, like, I put to bodybuilding, like, I ran track and I did the 400, and like, Michael Johnson was my favorite athlete. I can assure you his system did not feel the same mm-hmm. as everyone else's. Like, when he was spinning around the track, like, his legs probably didn't burn as much, you know, like, the cardiovascular fatigue, it was probably experienced totally differently. And I don't think people understand that. Like, I think everyone can train themselves to like work harder, to focus better. But I have some, there's a subgroup of athletes, because there's hard workers that are just like very infatuated with like the work at hand. Like, if they're so motivated to get it done that, you know, it's not much of a bother to do whatever it takes. But you have some like a subgroup of folks that are, they're just like the dumb jock, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like if you were to ask them like about their fatigue levels and what, it's like, what? Like,
yeah,
I don't know what you're talking about. So it, yeah, like hard work, like there's a genetic component to everything. Like we see it. Oh, so I own like two little pit bulls, and they're like, they're gamey dogs. Like, I got, mines are more on the gamey side, so they have this intense drive. So same thing with people. It's like you see all the variation, like with, you know, within like dogs, it's like it's the same thing. It's like they are, I can put them out on the flirt pool and they will literally go until they die if I let them. Whereas like, you know, big mastiff is like, bro, like I'm just gonna go lay down, I've had enough of this after like two rounds. So
right.
So yeah, our behaviors. So it's just good to know. Like, I think a lot of people can take this and it's a little bit depressing, the whole free will thing,
right?
You know, but yeah, like so much of like we're humans, so there's more layers to our behavior, absolutely. But we're just as predictable as like, I don't know, like any other species of animal. It's like, yeah, well, that's within the realm of that species. It just kind of lends more this way. So it's so much of us is just hardwired, and it's just, this is what you got.
Yeah. Have you gone down the whole like Sam Harris free will topics and all that stuff?
I've gone down that topic, but not his perspective.
Not Sam. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, it is interesting. You know, we don't have that's obviously a very long conversation, but it is interesting to, I'll think about this with animals a lot, right? And people will say, oh, well, you know, if you just worked hard or you whatever. And it's like, okay, would you ever say that about these two different breeds of dogs? That like, if there's this dog just trained, it could be as fast as this greyhound. Like, you just wouldn't say that, right? Or I think Nick said it in the example of, you could have a really fast pig, that's not going to be a racehorse. But even within the same species, right? There's just such dramatic variation. And obviously it is different with humans. And I'm not, I feel like I have to say this so many times on the podcast, and I'm not trying to be demotivational. The analogy I gave on the podcast or on the genetics video was just to say, okay, so like, let's say take the average height of a man versus a woman, right? So in the United States, it's like 5'9", 5'10", versus like 5'4", 5'5", right? The variation within the two genders is so much greater, right? You got guys who are 4'11", guys who are 7'1", right? So much greater than the average between the two. And I don't think it's something that should always be talked about, but if you had a daughter that for whatever reason was into wrestling, let's say, you know, she's just one of the unusual women who got into wrestling, and she wrestled from the time she was 5 to 12. And then she wrestled a 12-year-old boy who'd been wrestling for 1 year, and that boy stomped her, which could definitely happen. Nobody would be like, wow, he's really just worked so much harder, right? But like, you wouldn't have that conversation, but you also wouldn't sit there and have to tell her, like, you just understand that there's these huge genetic variations, right? And so the reason I bring it up is only in the sense, it's probably not really for the people who watch my videos because they mostly get it. It's just hopefully gets out to, you know, a broader population that like, look, there is still massive variations within the same sex too. And so I can also understand, if I want to play devil's advocate, it's much harder to know what the reason is of the same sex, right? You see a male versus a female competitor, we just know, yeah, there's this huge variation between them. With two men, for example, is it because one is 30th percentile but worked super, super hard, or is it because they're 70th percentile and didn't work that hard? Like, it's much murkier. So I can understand that. I'm just saying the variation should be, you should be aware of it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you end up coming all the way back around. And when you are aware of what it is that was given to you, what you're working with, I think you can better appreciate what you've done and you can kind of get out of that, like comparing yourself to others, like loophole. So, I think at first you go through those stages where it's like, oh man, maybe I'm genetically screwed. And then later on, you're like, but you know what, on a relative scale, compared to that, like freak of nature guy who would have been more jacked and lean than most people, even if like you were a homeless person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've done more with myself. And so to me, it's like, hey, at the end, it's all a big game. And like, yeah, you're maximizing, you know, the game that you're playing with.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And I, just to be clear to everybody, I really think there's great potential in most people. I really think most people do have a lot of untapped potential, and maybe I should talk about that belief of mine more, because I've seen people come from very similar families or very similar situations and do vastly different things with their lives. So, yes, if you're in the bottom 10th percentile or the top 10th percentile, there could be some very hard struggles for you or some things that come super easily. But, you know, if you just look at a bell curve and how that just works, most people can do a lot more than they're doing and can accomplish a lot more than they are. So I really don't mean to be negative. And I think there's so many examples of people who, at the end of the day, you can see that they had a very similar situation, not just with lifting, but life and dramatically different outcomes depending on what went into it.
No, absolutely. Most people are like severe underperformers, and it's usually, you know, they get in their own way, to be honest. Like that's what stops us. Like we stop ourselves for the most part. So yeah, I'd say very few people are getting everything out of themselves, and the chunk that's missing, I think it's pretty significant in the case of most folks.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, man, I don't want to take too much of your time, and you're probably at least relatively tired given how lean you are. I'm definitely interested to catch up again after. I don't think I knew that you were doing 4 shows. So definitely, you know, once you've recovered and, you know, you got some food back in and everything, maybe we can touch base in the new year. And I mean, obviously you and I will probably talk privately other than that, but be interested to get you back on and kind of just see how a kind of, you know, this competition season roundup went.
Yeah, no, we're definitely getting into a new chapter. I think the other day I was, you know how it goes. It's like these thoughts come into your head when it's like the least appropriate for them to like pop in. And I'm like, I think I'm ready to push. Like, I'm ready to like, it just had to come to me. So maybe I'll have a different story to tell by then, but I think I'm ready to push. And every prep I've done, like I can go back to instances where I've gone in my own way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, you're aware of a lot of those trap doors. Let's not do that. Like I was very tempted to actually skip my refeeds. Like I have one starting today.
Okay. And
it goes up until Tuesday. I was very tempted to skip that. And I'm like, no. Like you've done shit like that before. So, mm-hmm. So yeah. So we'll see. Hopefully it's a different enough story that it's worth mentioning afterwards. But I look forward to every one of these preps. Like this is one thing I will say, like for any sort of like body recomp enthusiast, bodybuilder, I think more people are bodybuilders than they think. My mom's a bodybuilder technically.
Yeah.
If you are in that like weirdo group where it's like you have your habits in line, it's like you've been training, like this is just a big part of your overall culture, like the way you live. I do think at least once in your life getting what Mike Israetel would call like exotically lean or your version of that it's just worth it, because you're, you know, like given the environment that we get to live in 2020, to get a lot of those things removed and make put yourself like into like this bare bones like brain mode, you learn so much about yourself, because all that stuff is there, it's just like hidden. So as I jump into this next phase, I look forward to exposing myself to those elements and like I guess seeing what I'm really about in a more like primal sort of like brain setting.
Yeah. Well, it's good stuff, man. It's good to see you guys around so long. I was talking with a few people the other day about this space is so fluctuating, you know, and both to have a career in it, but even just to be in it at all. And something I say is, you know, do a lot of these people have stable careers? Like the people who are big now, will they be around in 10 years? And one way to think about it is, okay, well, who is big now? Were they around 10 years ago? And it's like, well, was this person around? No. Was this person around? No. Was this person around? No. But was 3DMJ around? Yeah. I mean, you guys, what, 2008, I think, was when you started putting out videos, something like that. Maybe 2009. Nah, what was it? Maybe 10 or 11, whatever it was, over a decade ago. So it's been a long time. And you guys are still going strong, still putting out the content. It's good to see such consistency over a long period of time. It doesn't seem like you're going anywhere.
Yeah. You know, I think you tell kids about people who were like hot in it like 5 years ago. They're like, who?
Yeah.
I'm like, how do you not know who Jamie Easton is or Skip LaCour? And
yeah.
I think a lot of that comes down to if you are someone who wants to exist in the space for extended period of time, it comes down to education. Like, education powers everything. Like, if you make that a priority, like, that kind of takes care of itself, because at some point I'll probably start backsliding a little bit, like, physique wise. But my curious nature, I think, will keep me as relevant as I want to be, like, in this space, which is crazy, right? Because this is about the way you look, the way you perform, right? But at the end, even that is kind of powered by this big computer we have down here. So yeah, I guess to folks who want to do this for a living, it's like, hey, instead of like focusing so much on the getting the good lighting and you know, figuring out the algorithm, if you hit the books hard, like my friend Nin Nguyen, like, says he's a professor at San Jose State. He's like, his like answer to almost everything is like, study. Study. And yeah, it's like, okay, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, I think everybody's pretty familiar with you guys, but where can they find more of your stuff?
3DMuscleJourney.com. And we're really expanding on the educational component there, like really trying to make that a priority going forward. We got some rabbit holes for you if you're into that. And I think most of we have a lot of cross contamination with our there's like a lot of the curious folk, right? Who,
yeah,
it's almost a second hobby they make out of this like fitness thing. It's like there's a lifting part, and then there's like the, hey, let me just dwell on these topics. So
we have some stuff
for y'all if you guys are into that.
Awesome. Well, I'll have links below. And thanks again, man.
Hey, thank you, man.